Hello, career competitor. This is Steve Mellor, as always, here to share with you some powerful conversation and some significant insights into what it means to optimize your career in pursuit of your optimal self. I am excited to be introducing our guest here shortly. But as always, let me draw your attention to careercompetitor.com, where you'll see right at the top of that homepage is a place where you can enter your email and become a part of my monthly subscription, my mid-monthly message, where I am just simply giving you that little nudge in the middle of the month to remember that whatever it was you set out to achieve with all that energy at the outset of the month, and whatever those lofty goals may be at the end of the month, that you're not going to lose sight of that journey in between. Become a part of my community today. Head to careercompetitor.com, enter your email, and look forward to my next mid-monthly message. Now, let's get right into the show. Hello there, and welcome in to this episode of Career Competitor, where I have the pleasure of welcoming in David Schreiner for a conversation that has this beautiful balance of both individual growth and then cultural focus as well. So really excited to dive into this one. And as always, David will get the introduction that he certainly deserves in just a moment. But here's three things to be on the lookout for in regards to the conversation. Firstly, David emphasizes why before you focus your energy too much on what's ahead, focus on excelling where you are. Secondly, we dive into the importance of implementing the true definition of communication within your culture. And finally, we learn why optimal engagement stems from one's desire to honor the values of those you engage with. So these three things and much more on this fantastic episode with my guest, David Schreiner, and I hope you all enjoyed. Okay, our career competitor is the president and CEO of KSB Hospital in Dixon, Illinois. Throughout their career, our guest has not only been a student of leadership and culture, but they have put their education into practice through a wide variety of personal, professional, and organizational development strategies that have impacted hundreds upon thousands of employees. Most recently, our guest authored the book Be the Best Part of Their Day, where they navigate readers through countless examples of the ways in which value-driven leadership drives the type of culture that people not only want to work for, but how it fuels the principles and standards of an organization to where people are able to thrive within it as well. It's fair to say I've been looking forward to this interview for quite some time now, so it gives me great pleasure to welcome in Dr. David Schreiner. David, how are we doing?
We're doing fantastic, Steve. Thank you so much for having me. Your energy and positivity are aspirational for me. I just can't wait to get the discussion started.
Well, I'm right back at you. And I think for me, having, as I told you before we got recording here, halfway through your book, I've flown through it in about 6 days. I'm really enjoying it. And we'll get a little bit more into the book as we go. But the one question that just kept like flying out of me as I'm reading your book is, where in the world does this absolute appetite and passion of yours come from when it comes to just simply continually upraising, lifting up culture? Like, where does that appetite for just continually raising the bar when it comes to culture come from?
Well, Steve, I think for me, it began with sports. It began with athletics, and I had the opportunity to run Division I track and field. And in that situation, when you may not be as talented as many people that are around you, you have to keep growing. You have to find new ways in order to be successful. And I've tried to keep that in my mind throughout my life. When I got to the point where I wasn't on the competitive field anymore, then I did some amateur things, just recreational type sports. But as part of my professional life, growing has always been a part of that. And I really can't find another way. I may be addicted to that lifelong learning concept.
Yeah. And I hear that immediate, just like the way growth resonates with you. And it's one thing for it to individually do that. So much of my work today is based around how do I help someone sometimes get out of their own way, get unstuck, and even just optimize and thrive within the work that they do. But at the same time, this isn't just about you. This is about tens upon hundreds upon thousands of people over the years. So I'm curious, when you take that passion that you have internally, what might a step or two look like in terms of actually getting that passion that you have out towards people where they can really buy into it as well?
Yeah, I think it matters about what that individual's goal is. And I do love working with people one-to-one. I especially love working with new leaders and to hear what they're excited about in my field in healthcare, whether that's patient care or the development of teams, the building of organizational culture. I try to listen what is important to them and then try to give them some things to think about, some things to try to put new things into their tool belt. And I hope I'm answering your question, Steve, but it's really trying to find one thing that I can try that's new for that person and then talk them through trying to decide what type of effectiveness they have had with that one thing and hardwire it before we move on to things number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And the more enthusiastic the leader is, they want to move fast. And my thought is really around that idea of let's take one thing, let's really make sure we've got that the way you want it. And then let's talk about what your next passion is.
Yeah, I mean, you've given us such a more in-depth example of this, the whole term, you know, walk before you run, you know, this notion of, hey, let's just take a minute here and say, instead of us trying to eat the whole pizza, what would it look like just to take a slice, you know, just what, how, and I had to make a joke like that around a Chicago guy, right? You know, I'm in with the relevant jokes right away. But anyway, the point being is like, there's an opportunity for any emerging leader, new leader, as you say, that passionate, that the desire to get involved that you have with those types of individuals. They see something that's maybe 2, 3, 4 times evolved version of themselves ahead of them, and they assume they should immediately try to embody that version of leadership when really there's so many more steps that come before that. So I'm curious, what is it about your persona, your character that maybe allows them to sort of say, you know, okay, I get it. Like I'm thinking too big. I'm thinking too far. I do need to get a little bit more right foot, next step right in front of me. Like, how do you maybe just bridge that to begin with?
One of the things that I tell young leaders often, Steve, that they don't really want to hear is that idea that I've not seen someone that was promoted to their third or fourth or fifth job without excelling in the position that they're in. And so many times we see where we are, and you described it so well. We see where we want to be 1 year, 3 years, 5 years down the road, but we do have to get results where we are. And it's really hard to skip those steps. You know, there are certainly unusual situations where that can happen. But in most cases, you, whatever the key metrics are, those key performance indicators, you do have to excel in those in order to get future opportunities. And so the things I talk about are just being great at the job that you're in and also connecting with the people that we work with, because we learn so much when we report to different people, when we have different people report to us. And I think the way that we absorb those learnings goes a long ways in allowing us to grow and be more successful in the future. So it really is that one step at a time. And a lot of time, early careerists, that's not exactly what they want to hear, but I think it's important for them to consider that success in the job that they're in.
Yeah, excel where you are. I mean, that's a beautiful way to put it. And for anybody listening, no matter where you are, and I really challenge anybody that may feel as though they're there at this point, that they've gotten to the position that they're in. You know, one thing that we talk about so much on this show is this optimal self notion of like always improving, always bettering oneself. And you're very much speaking to that, but you're making it more about the role that you're in right now. Like wherever you are in your career, whether you feel like you're in your first step or the 10th step and you know you've got still so much to go, whatever it may be, what does excelling right where you are look like? And how might that make you a little bit more aware as well of just what's going on around you and taking advantage of those opportunities that are right in front of you? And that actually nicely transitions us into some of this notion around value-driven leadership that you speak about in such great quality within the book. And before I go too far into the details and even pulling in some of what we were just talking about, I would love for you just to set the table here. Like, to you, in your words, what is value-driven leadership?
Can I go back briefly for just 1 second? Because you have to unpack something really quickly that you said.
Please do. I get too far ahead sometimes.
No, I want to get back. Please don't forget the question. But I also thought about how important it is while we're going through what you just described and through being great in the job that we're in to also allow ourselves to dream. Because I think that's such a big part of appreciative inquiry. And we want to have that 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year dream out there. The last thing we want to do as leaders is to tap that down or kill that for someone else. So I sometimes feel like I have to be so locked into what I'm doing right now. I have to be successful where I am and dream about what I want. So I just want to throw that in there, Steve. I think it's such an important component of working with people and encouraging them to dream. And I ask them to tell me in vivid detail, tell me what that looks like, that position that you're thinking about. Tell me everything you can do. How's it feel? How's it smell? Well, how do you get out of the car in the morning when you're going into work? I just think those things are so important. So I sidetracked you and I apologize for that.
No, you're good. I love that. And it's such an important caveat because, again, it's almost implementing that reverse engineering notion right away. It's like, we know where we want to get to, and that's great. And that day will come. There's no doubt. But what can we do right now to excel where we are and not to squash that dream, like you say? So love it. Love it. Right. Let's talk value-driven leadership. Give us that definition of yours.
Let's do. So for values-driven leadership, it's that authentic, transparent self. It's that idea that we show up in a similar fashion with the things that mean the most to us, regardless of what the situation is and regardless of who the audience is. And I think it makes it so much easier. It took me so long to understand that the person that I was at home with my spouse can be the same person that I am in the workplace as a CEO. And it's not a facade that I can try to put on and take off like a coat and put the coat that I need for the day on. I am who I am. Some people are going to love that. Some people are not going to love it. And there'll be a lot of people in the middle. So for me, it's just that idea of trying to show up the same way, regardless of the situation. And I think that that does create confidence and trust and something of an understanding that I know I'm not going to get Dr. Jekyll one day and Dr. Hyde the next, because we've worked in that environment and it's really, really hard. So that, to me, that values-driven leadership is understanding what's important to us and modeling that time after time after time over a significant period of time.
Yeah. And this is, as I was reading it in the book and listening to you repeat it here, it's one of those definitions and insights that you hear and you just go, well, yeah, like, of course, like, why wouldn't we do it that way? But it's, again, it's a beautiful example of easier said than done, because again, all these influences come in, all these perspectives, all these impressions come into our world, especially when you're the person who's receiving all of it as you are in your role, and you're having to look across the entire organization and say, what's best for this person, this department, this situation, all these kind of things. Of course, it would be easy for you to be influenced to maybe get away from your most authentic self. So from a discipline standpoint, how have you been able to make that transition? Because you speak about it in the book. It wasn't necessarily always like that. It wasn't always that easy. But at the same time, you've clearly figured out a way. What might that discipline look like to be able to be consistent with that?
Yeah, for me, it began with the realization that I was underperforming to my own standards. And I go back to the time, it was 2019. It was a lunch that I had with a friend of mine that I talk about in the book. And our hospital KPIs were good. Our patient satisfaction scores were good. Our quality was good. Our employee satisfaction scores were good. And I felt as if I was under delivering and I couldn't quite figure out why. And so the things that I learned through my doctoral program and the research that I did, really the research that led to the book, were around the idea of finding the ways that people show up every day with these things in place, these three main principles and these five underlying concepts. And how many of those am I doing? There's a total of 15, Steve. And am I doing 12? Am I doing 9? Am I doing 5? And if I'm doing 5, can I pick one thing that I'm passionate about and try to add that, make that number 6? It goes back to the conversation we had earlier about growth, personal growth. But I think that consistency comes from keeping it in front of us and being intentional about what's important in the way that we show up for the people that matter to us the most.
How important has it been when you think about some of this surrounding system, support system that you've had over the years? I mean, again, you reference your wife a few times and she's this wonderful insight as mine is too. It's funny, right? It's funny how our wives seem to have this ability to tell us the right thing at the right time in a way that we need to hear it. There's something about that in marriage. I don't know what that is, but it's real. But the fact is that there's been some of this support system around you that's been able to help you simply be aware of so much of what you spoke about here. Tell us a little bit about the role that support system can play, especially for someone in leadership like yourself.
Yes, I count on my partner to tell me you have 2 master's degrees and a doctorate and you can't remember to close a refrigerator door, right? So we all need that person in our life. And a couple of people that I talk about in the book is just last weekend, I had the opportunity to see my high school track coach inducted into my high school's Hall of Fame.
Oh, very cool.
And the observation that I had around that is, as I listened to them read the state champions and the team champions and the conference numbers and all of the stats that they gave out, and it occurred to me that none of that had anything to do with why people love him. we love him because of his positivity. He was the first person in my life that did not permit me to use the word can't. I mean, as a track team, right? If you use the word can't, you were running. Mm-hmm. And so it was just that idea around you can do anything. And if you can dream it, you can go accomplish it. And I was fortunate enough to have someone in my life at a very young age that started that. And then I've also had the chance to work with just some fantastic leaders. And as I've also worked for some people that were not fantastic leaders. And I hope I learned from those people as well what not to do, which sometimes I think is just as important as having the opportunity to work for people that you really love and admire. So you keep people in front of us. You try to spend as much time with the people that have values that are close to your own. I think that matters. And try to spend less time with the people where there's that significant disconnect, because it can be really draining when you're in that situation.
Yeah, especially when you're thinking about that resulting energy that you're needing to show up with for so many people that are willing and ready and looking forward to those engagements with you each and every day or whatever it might be. And putting together the kind of work that you're asking of them within that organization there. And relationships is something you speak of in great detail through the lens of communication within the book. And I think one thing I really appreciated as a communication graduate, I'm an undergrad in communication, master's in management, is one of the first things you say, I think it's actually on the back of the book, to be honest, is you talk about the fact that communication and engagement, but we'll get to engagement in a little bit, but communication is this term that has been incorrectly sort of defined now for quite some time. And I'm right here with you. You're preaching right now in terms of a complete agreement, especially from this guy who's been educated on it. So I would love for you just to maybe speak a little bit to how is it we've gotten communication, not necessarily wrong, but we're off. We're just not doing it the way we necessarily should be or seeing it the way we should be. Talk to me a little bit about this.
I have so many times in my career where I have drafted a wonderful email. I put a lot of thought into it, included everything I wanted. I even had the humor I wanted to insert in there. And I hit send and it's like, that was awesome. This is wonderful communication. And I had a really good friend of mine that was another CEO and outside of the healthcare system. And he said, Dave, the most important thing to remember about communication is nobody reads your shit. And it really left a mark on me. It was that idea of, because I hit that send button doesn't mean that I communicated. So I found out through my research that we have to use multiple mediums. Some people, that text message is great. Other people have to be face-to-face, either one-to-one or in a small group. Others would like to see a video. And, you know, there's so many ways that we have now to interact with others. And it's not about how we want to do it, but it's about how they receive it. And it can never be a one-size-fits-all. We have to understand who our audience is in a deep way. And the only way to understand is by listening, by asking them great questions. And that's helped me to try to communicate more effectively. I got away from that idea of doing what works for me and trying to focus on what works for them.
Golly. And I love when these sort of things happen in my world and someone comes on the podcast and starts speaking through their experiences and their lens. And I just see this coming together. And I was at a leadership event just this morning, listening to two phenomenal speakers, and the way in which they actually made me start thinking about the world of speaking. And I realized one, especially who comes from this highly illustrious communication background, I sat there thinking, they're not speaking at me right now. They're communicating with me. I'm listening and I'm responding emotionally. We may not be in a conversation, but the way in which they are speaking and addressing this room right now, they are intending to communicate. They are not intending to be just simply heard. And I think that is such timely insight that you're providing here. I see your head nodding. Go ahead. Chime in.
I'm resonating so much with you. I have to hold myself back from not jumping in.
Yeah.
You know,
please do.
I do have the opportunity to speak. I don't take that deck that's the same regardless of where you go. I know some speakers are very effective in doing that, but I can't. Mm-hmm. One of the requirements that I have for a group before I speak is we get together in advance and we talk about what's important to you, because I want to meet your needs. And I can't have the same deck of 23 slides that I use regardless of the audience. So you've got to find out what is important. And I think that's where communication is, as opposed to a great delivery or an entertaining format for a 1 hour keynote. There's so many different ways to go at it. And it's a lot more fun when you feel like you're connected. And I'm so excited for you to have that experience this morning. It doesn't happen all the time. And if you had two in one day, that's a great day.
Yeah. Well, we're very fortunate for sure. Very fortunate. But I love where we've gone here with the conversation, because what it does now is we've created this sort of table, if you will, for people to really understand your approach to leadership. It may seem as though we're just talking about ideas and concepts right now, but these are things that you live and you preach and you truly execute daily within the hospital. And I'm just curious now, when you look at, let's say, the industry that is, you can make it healthcare, that's maybe a bit too vague, hospitals, you know, maybe that's a bit more specific. You know, this is a high pressure, high climate sort of industry. And it is an industry in the last 3 or 4 years that when we think about the COVIDs and all the sort of back, you know, the backlash from that, the way in which that's been felt throughout the industry for employees at all levels, how is it you've been able to implement and continue to see the benefits of this work that you've been doing during what has been historically as difficult a time within the industry?
Yeah, with our particular hospital, we're a small rural hospital. We have about 950 employees. And it's as hard as any time that I can remember. And I've been here 35 years at the same place. It's as difficult now as it ever has been because of some discussions we're having about affiliation and changes in our organizational structure. And I found that those key communication components are more important than ever. That idea of being out in the work, meeting people where they are, you know, all of those basic tenets of that transparency, a commitment when we're going through a time of change, for me to say to our employees, you're going to hear from me every Friday at noon. And there might be a week or two where I don't have anything new to share, and I'll just tell you that. But anything that happened between last week and this week, you're going to hear about it with that video that comes out at noon. And that video is the beginning. I hope that you'll invite me to your department meetings. I hope that you'll shoot me an email or come by and see me and tell me what you're thinking about. You know, it's not or anymore. It's and. You've got to do all. And I think the more that you describe that situation, of the more as that tension goes up and the work is harder and we're asking more, I think that communication engagement are more important than ever.
Yeah. Well, we've gone into communication in great detail. I appreciate that insight. And it gives us that opportunity to transition towards engagement now, because that has been, within the industry, one of the biggest downfalls is that inability to actually keep an employee engaged during a time where, in many ways, it's understandable, right? The amount of adversities that they've had to deal with in terms of just the sheer magnitude of the situation and the amount of things that feel like they're out of their control. Engagement is so difficult. Talk to us now a little bit about some of these values and principles. Let's actually go into the definition. Like, again, we talked about it earlier. Engagement's been incorrectly used for so long. Give us that insight from your perspective of how we all should be engaging and how we all should be looking at that word in terms of its definition.
Well, so many people shy away from this word, and I did for a long time as well. But I think we have to show people that we love them. I think we have to show that we care about them. And it's hard to do the more people that you have in your organization or on your team. But there's also ways to do that. And it really begins with engaging and connecting at a personal level. What are the things that we can do to understand what matters to you? And we certainly have this base of things that are organizationally driven, the values that we hold as an organization, the mission statement that we have, the work that we do, whether it's in manufacturing or education or healthcare. Those things are always there, and we want to talk about those frequently. And we also have to find a way to connect. And to me, that engagement and connection are so important. And what are the things that I can do to understand what's important to you and deliver on as many of those things as I can? And, you know, there's certainly always times where we can't deliver on all of them, but then just say so. Make sure that you don't do what I had one physician tell me is the slow no. He said, Dave, you know, there's one thing if you tell me yes, that's great. There's one thing if you tell me no, I can live with that. Just don't go 30 days and tell me I'm working on it.
Right. Right. And it goes all the way back to where we started with this value-driven leadership. It's one thing as a leader for you to have values, but so much of what you're speaking to here is knowing the values of those around you. And it's great that you can get people to buy into your values potentially as the leader, as the CEO, president in your situation. But what if someone else's values are just as significant in a specific communication, in a specific relationship, whatever it may be? Like, that can be at the heart of the engagement truly happening or the engagement being lost. Is just that inability to respect these values that the person who's looking at you holds on to themselves. And I'm just curious, as for you, when you think about those conversations, you've probably had tens upon hundreds upon thousands to be able to remember them all. how do you approach these difficult conversations when you think about these so many, you've probably had so many in the last few years? Like, what does it look like for you to be able to honor engagement while also honoring, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, the elephant in the room, whatever the situation or the issue might be?
Yeah, when we talk about values, it's so interesting to me to think about someone that has values that are different than my own. And one of the things that has always been frustrating to me is I think in the general media today, we don't listen to understand. We're thinking about the next thing we're going to say. And that's difficult. And I think that does speak to values. If I'm open to learning what's important to you, I may or may not adjust my values, but I'm listening. And I'm giving you the right to hold those. Now, if there's a big disconnect between the organizational values and individual values, then I think we can all see that may create a situation where it's not positive for either party. But more often than not, it's that work around the edges. It's trying to make sure that our organization can grow from a diversity perspective to understand what's important to others. And what about that new organization we have, right, Steve, if we're able to do that? If we start so homogenous and we have the understanding to think and hear about new ways and new opportunities that people think, we can probably serve our customer slash patient in a better way, in a more meaningful way.
Yeah. And it comes up early on in the book is that it's all about that experience, that these people that are coming into your hospital, and you mentioned it earlier, that you are on the smaller side of hospitals, you are something that is in a specific area that people, just about anyone and everyone in any position of leadership and responsibility, so to speak, in and around that hospital is probably known in any other building that you walk into in and around the area. So these principles and these values that you speak to, they can't just be the sort of thing, like you said before, with leadership, it can't just be a coat that you put on and a coat that you take off. It has to be something that you're comfortable with walking into the hospital with and walking out of the hospital with, because it's your everyday, it's your all day, everyday life, your approach to just who it is you are. And I found that part of the book fascinating, just listening to you sort of speak through that, because it's something that a lot of leaders don't have to deal with. They don't have to think about, hey, how am I seen when I walk to the grocery store or whatever it is, but you very much speak to that. And that must have been quite the juggling act, so to speak, when you first maybe took this leadership role.
It was very different for me because I grew up in the community, so to speak, right? I came here so many years ago and I went from a department director to a junior administrator, you know, several different ways along to CEO. And one of the things that for me was really telling is I completely underestimated the difference between number two and number one. Between chief operating officer and CEO was not one step. And it were really all of the decisions, so to speak, that landed in the corner office that before it was, here's my opinion, you decide. I did completely underestimate that. And one of the things I love about our community is when we go out for dinner, we're going to have someone stop by our table and talk about their healthcare experience. And I'm more okay with that than my wife is, but it's part of the gig. And I think we accept that. And we know that we're blessed by so many gifts by being in leadership positions. There's a few things that come with that territory. And, you know, we accept those or we don't, but they're part of the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
And any CEO in the same way, it does. If you can connect back to those core values that are important, I think it does take some of the pressure off of not worrying about who you're talking to, because you're going to give the same answer.
Yes, yes. And that comes through in abundance with yourself. And I was just going to say that any COOs out there that are listening to this have just realized that, oh, as much as I want that next job, you're telling me that it's numerous steps, is it? Okay, good to know, good to know. So that's noted to any of our COOs listening.
Let's talk. Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah, let's talk.
And there's wonderful, beautiful gifts that come along with that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, before I just give you that space and maybe talk a little bit more about the book, one thing I would love to just get out of you before we start to finish here is, you know, everything that we're about on this show is competitiveness. It's about bettering yourself, challenging yourself, and all these sort of insights and principles. And I'm just curious, when I look at you and I say, hey, David, just tell us about the competitor that you are. Firstly, does that term resonate with you? And if so, how does it resonate with you? Just tell us a little bit about your competitive side.
Oh, it resonates in the best way. I mean, when I did make that move from 2 to 1, I said, I want to be the best rural hospital in the country. I want to be recognized as the place that people want to come to, even though we may not have all of the same technology and expertise as some higher organizations. And have we got there? No. But it doesn't mean we're not going to stop trying. And if you think about why you want to win, And for me, that why is that if you bring a loved one to our hospital, you want to know that you're going to receive care that is as good as anywhere on the planet. And if we can't do that, then we shouldn't be doing that procedure. And I think that competitiveness does make all of us drive to be really great. And it's easy to see, I think, in healthcare. And it's and in other businesses, you have to decide, why is it so important that we win? Why is that competitiveness matter? And there's answers. I think there are great answers depending on what your field is. But I don't know how I would survive. I'm competitive about everything and probably to a fault.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. And something that you're alluding to here, which is so important, that you're not just saying, hey, go out there and try to win. You're saying why. Why do you want to win? And that's so often I've seen it in sport, as I'm sure you have done over the years, but more so now in business is this whole notion of win at all costs. Like that's the differentiator that you're saying here, is that if you can actually justify the why behind the win, then so much of the work that will go into the win now can come from places such as value-driven leadership. You can start to really break this down and say, hey, there are principles that come with the win that we can still find a way to honor through this process.
What if you win at all costs and you're not happy at the finish line, right? That podium is no fun if you're not excited about why you got there. You should be able to look back at the journey, at the training, at the sacrifices of all the things that you did that nobody else was willing to do. How fun is it to stand up on that podium knowing that, as opposed to an alternative of being up there knowing that there was some kind of a factor that wasn't consistent with your values? That's almost more of a loss than a win, right? I mean, that's not where anybody wants to be.
I'm with you. Well, let's get to the book and just tell everybody, David, about, you know, firstly, I always like to ask this question, like, why is now the right time? Why was, you know, you've been doing this job for some time and now is the time that you've decided to put this book out. So tell us a little bit about why this is the right time for you to write the book, but then go into a little bit of information specific to the book as well.
Yeah, the why for me is I did do a dissertation and nobody other than my mom would ever read that. And I'd never wish it upon anybody to read it. And I found some stories through that research that I thought were interesting. And my dissertation chair and my dissertation committee members encouraged me to take those stories that weren't appropriate for an academic piece and put those into a book. And so this is what I describe as an airplane read, that if you got a couple hour flight, you can probably knock it out. And, you know, my hope is through anybody that reads the book that they might find one thing that allows them to communicate, to engage at a higher level with the people that matter to them the most.
I love it. And I'll tell you this, firstly, you're going to find more than one. And secondly, we have only scratched the surface in terms of some of the abundance of insights and impact that you can get from this book within this interview. And I just want to really encourage people to make the effort to go grab themselves a copy with the book. And David, where can we get a copy of the book? You got to do that part too.
It is available on Amazon. It came out on January 16th. It was published through Forbes. And so it's called Be the Best Part of Their Day, Supercharging Engagement Through Values-Driven Leadership. So Amazon is one option. It should be at your favorite bookstore. And if it's not in the store, they can get it for you. I also have a website if you'd like more information. It's drdavidschreiner.com.
And all that information will be in the show notes as always. David, listen, before I let you go, one last insight. Give us that leadership tip, that insight, that thing that you feel as though anybody that's wherever they are in their career right now, what might that insight be that's going to be good for them to hear today?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Really quick, if I can, Steve. A portion of the proceeds of the book and speaking and engagements that I do with people go to our hospital's foundation, to the KSB Hospital Foundation. I'm really proud of that. They've taken great care of me. That insight that I look at, and you mentioned before, all these things seem so simple, and it's not anything you haven't heard before, but it's the need that we have in our society for kindness, for love, for showing that we care about people. Is there one thing that you can do today where that person that you interacted with goes home and they're sitting at the dinner table and they say, this was the best part of my day. This was really cool. This person did something that was unexpected and unusual and maybe even routine, but it meant a lot to me. That's the part that I would ask people to think about, Steve, is life is tough. Is there one thing that you can do today for one person to be that best part?
I love it. Well, I'll be getting that information from you regarding the foundation as well, to put it all in the show notes so people have access to that. And David, listen, this was a pleasure. I told you before we started recording we were going to fly through this 30, 35 minutes, and we certainly did that. I've broken a little bit of a sweat here, so that usually means that it was a good conversation. So hopefully everybody else agrees. And listen, just best of luck with the book, best of luck with the rest of the year, and all the best just to you and your team over there at the hospital. I just really appreciate the time. I know how hard it is for you to get away for 45 minutes, so thanks again.
Dave, you're very kind. Thank you for the opportunity.
And my thanks again to David for joining us. And since the recording, huge news for David. His book actually went to number one Amazon bestseller, which is such a huge deal. He joins now a pretty long line of people that have been on Career Competitor that can now put Amazon bestseller next to their name. So huge congrats to David and his team for making that happen. But on your way out, I want to just give you this food for thought that David provided just towards the back end there of the interview, this notion of why you want to win and specifically why it's so important for you to win. If you're listening to a show like this, I already know that you're competitive. I already know you have this curiosity, maybe even this appetite towards finding success within your world. But when you get clear on that why, all of a sudden, you become aware of how you go about getting those wins, how you go about achieving those successes day in and day out. Trust me, connect clearly with that why, and so many other parts of the pursuit of success and finding ways to win are going to suddenly fall into place. So keep that in mind as you go about everything in your world over this next week or so. On your way out, don't forget to subscribe, don't forget to share the show, and don't forget to come back next time for another episode of Career Competitor. Best of luck in your world with anything and everything you've got going on. And bye for now.